Our last case this morning is 2021-822 and 2021-857, In Re KK et al. We have Mr. Greer.
Chief Justice, Associate Justice Counsel, and may it please the court. My name is Michael Greer, and I represent Butler County Children's Services. In an abuse, neglect, and dependency case, when a parent has failed to move for dismissal of a complaint claiming a violation of the 90-day rule set forth in RC 2151-35B1, the doctrine of res judicata must prohibit that parent from raising that argument for the first time when appealing from a permanent custody judgment. The language that we're looking at here is similar to the language found in the speedy trial rights, the RC 2945-71-73. With speedy trial rights, the criminal defendant must file a motion to dismiss with the trial court. If he fails to do that, then he has waived the right.
But the speedy trial rule is different because that rule says the defendant must file a motion to dismiss. This one says the judge can dismiss sua sponte.
Yes, but it also says that it's upon motion of parties or the guardian ad litem of the child.
Or the judge.
Yes, it does. It requires action. Like speedy trial rights, it requires an action. It's not self-executing. Speedy trial rights are not self-executing. This requires some sort of action, either by a party following a motion or the court itself. If the General Assembly meant for this to be automatic, they would not have included that language. There's no need to include that language. So that language has to have some meaning. And I think that meaning is clear and unambiguous. It means that there has to be action by someone. It has to be by the court. It has to be by the party. Until that action happens, then there is no garnering of a dismissal. And that means since it's not self-executing, it doesn't implicate subject matter jurisdiction. It merely, as this court noted in In Re KM, it merely puts a limitation on the court's authority, but it doesn't divest the juvenile court of subject matter jurisdiction. So in a situation like this, the dispositional orders, they weren't void, they're avoidable.
So your opposing counsel says that any time that there was it went beyond 90 days and it wasn't dismissed, that these orders are all void. So I presume under that any permanent custody award where there was a 90-day gap, under their theory, would be void. How many cases would that affect?
I can't tell you how many cases.
Thousands, tens of. If we adopted that, there would be all kinds of.
I can tell you what's happening in Butler County.
They could be undone and.
Okay. In Butler County, as soon as In Re KK was released, I'm in the appellate section. We went to the juvenile section and told them to start auditing their cases to see how many cases, and there was a lot. So the juvenile section has been filing multiple motions to dismiss and multiple new complaints on just pending cases. We now have other cases pending appeal in front of the 12th District, raising this issue for the first time, where you've had a dispositional order outside the 90 days, no motion to dismiss, no appeal of the dispositional order, going to PC, having an adjudication hearing on the PC, having objections after the PC motion has been ruled on, and then for the first time on appeal, this coming up for the first time. It's affected numerous cases just in our office. I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands, of cases it's going to affect.
Well, and I guess if you buy the idea that it's void, that means that it could be done. It could be undone at any time, right? So you could go back and challenge ones that were even people who are adults now. You could.
I think technically, yes. I mean, well, like with adoptions, I know that the statute, there's statute in place that allows maybe some insulation for adoptions, protecting that adoption. But it leaves us with no finality in what is some of the most important cases that we deal with. I mean, we're in an overworked system to begin with, and we try to get these dispositions within 90 days. It doesn't always happen. In this case, it didn't happen. This case happened before NRA KM came out, so everyone was assuming that the 90-day rule was directory. It was not mandatory, so no one addressed it. No motions were filed. No new complaints were filed. And we go on to permanency. We have children that are now, at that point, they achieve permanency. They have foster parents that want to adopt them, and that's all yanked away by the 12th District refusing to apply res judicata. The whole point of the juvenile justice system is to care and protect children, and that did not happen here. Children, this court has said that children, dependent and neglect children, are not required to languish in legally insecure placement. Great, that's wonderful, except that's exactly what's happening here, because the 12th District refused to apply res judicata. And I'm not arguing that NRA KM is wrong. I'm not arguing that this 90-day time limit shouldn't be mandatory, but I'm arguing that it should not implicate subject matter jurisdiction. If it is violated, it only renders the disposition order voidable. And at that point, if the parent does not file to dismiss and does not appeal the disposition order, as in this case, then res judicata applies. And if such a case, like this case, goes on to PC and the parental rights are terminated, that order is final. That's all I'm asking for. If there's no further questions, I'll reserve my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Garrett?
Chief Justice and members of the court, may it please the court, Dawn Garrett here on behalf of the appellee, Michael Kyle Jr., who's actually the father in this case, but that's because we've got a Michael Kyle III. It's an absolute pleasure to get to appear in front of you guys. This is my first time, so kind of excited about that. Anyway, with regard to this matter, the state is arguing a lot of things that are not relevant. And I'm not saying that it's not important about children and about their needs for permanency and how many cases there may be that may be affected. But there are a lot of cases that might have total merit to appear before this honorable tribunal, but if it's not filed by 11:59 and 59 seconds on the 45th day, no matter how laudable the issues, this court will not hear it.
Okay, but what you're asking for is an exception to the general rule that a judgment is voidable, not void. I mean, you want us to find that this is in one of those extraordinary category of cases where an order that's been entered is void because the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction. And we know that there's few cases where we apply that kind of extraordinary remedy. So I think it is fair to ask, you know, how many cases out there with this impact? So, I mean, essentially any time that there was a failure to enter a dispositional order within 90 days, which we know happened all the time prior to our decision, that any award of permanent custody in such a case can now just be undone, right? Someone just needs to file a motion.
With the exception, as was already alluded to by counsel, that there are protections, statutory protections in place for adoptions that were
fully completed. I'm not sure a statutory protection can overcome an order issued by a court that lacks subject matter jurisdiction. There's an order that's as we say in the law, is void from the beginning.
Well, that would be an issue to take up with the General Assembly. We do have a law that says that you can't revisit it, but that's not the issue today. Today is the issue is whether or not the juvenile court has authority after that 90th day. Juvenile courts are statutory.
The question is an authority, right? The question is, we've all said they don't have the authority, but the question is whether they have subject matter jurisdiction. That's a different question.
And the answer is they do not. Okay.
How do you get that?
Well, unlike speedy trial, which counsel has attempted to argue, speedy trial, if you read the statute, imposes the duty on the prosecution. It says that the defendant shall be brought to trial. That's an imposition on the prosecution, 2945.71. 2151.35b1 says the hearing shall not be held. That is a very different animal. That's not imposing the duty on the prosecution. That's not imposing the duty on the parties. No, that is saying the court shall not.
I understand. It says the court shall not do that. So if the court does, it makes an error. But how is that? How is that a lack of subject matter jurisdiction? If you look at, I assume you've read our Ruhlman decision where we explained that only where there was a specific statute that deprived a court of something within its general subject matter jurisdiction, was there actually a lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
There is in this case, because in the statute it not only puts a limitation and says there shall not be dispositional order until there's a separate hearing. The hearing shall not be held. But it is, people keep talking about self-executing or not self-executing. In this case, the statute also indicates that if the parties haven't filed the motion, then the court on its own. So it's required to do it. It's not an optional.
Right, but there's all kinds of things courts are required to do. And if they fail to do, and it's not raised on appeal, it's res judicata. That's the case for most things that are most trial court errors. Why is this any different?
One, the fact that there is a time limit placed in there is indicating that that is a limit on the authority of that court to take that action.
If courts miss other deadlines, there's all kinds of deadlines in the law. Generally, courts miss deadlines. It's not thought to be jurisdictional. It's thought to be an error that can be reversed on appeal. Why would this deadline be different than almost every other deadline?
Because juvenile courts are statutory and only have the powers conferred on them by statute. And in this case, the statute says that the hearing shall not be held. Therefore, the juvenile court does not have authority to hold that hearing.
But is that a jurisdictional statute? It's not a statute that says what authority the court, what category of cases a court may hear, which is what we think of as subject matter jurisdiction statute.
In this case, this court or the juvenile court cannot hear a matter after that deadline because of the statutory limit on its authority.
Is it a limit? I mean, it's obviously a rule that requires a hearing by a certain date. And there are other rules that the courts are required to adhere to, where often, and if the court doesn't do that, then there can be a motion for some action, for some remedy. We don't have that here, right?
Here we have a statute that says that if the parties don't raise it, the court must. That's a different
does
animal.
Does it say that the court must, or does it say that the court can?
Upon motion of any party or the court on its own motion.
You said the court must do it, and the language says that the court or any of the parties can.
The parties can. The court on its own motion shall dismiss, and this court has already indicated that, I'm sorry, I've lost my spot here.
And before you get there, it says, or a party on its own, or the court on its own motion. Doesn't that even suggest that it's not an automatic dismissal? Because wouldn't the language say that on a party's motion, or the court shall dismiss? It requires that the court even move itself.
I believe the implication is that the court is required to do it if the parties don't. Why would the language be placed in there? And the fact that this, the Ohio General Assembly, which gave the juvenile court its authority, even revisited the statute after this decision. And they could have said, oh, the juvenile court can do it at any other time or whatever, or it could be waived. It didn't. All it did was say, you can have an extra 45 days for good cause one time. They wanted to give more authority, they could have, but they didn't.
Was it required to say anything about waiver if waiver is presumed, if not, if there is an emotion on the court to dismiss? Like in all other instances?
In statutory construction, if we come back to the fundamentals, the word shall makes it mandatory. All right, so when a statute is clear and unambiguous, you don't interpret it.
Okay, but the question of whether it's mandatory or not is different than the question of whether the court has subject matter jurisdiction. Would you agree with that?
No, because if the judicial officer only gets their authority from the statute, and if the statute says that they shall do it with this time and they shall not do it after this deadline, then the judicial officer does not have authority after that time, just as this court does not have authority to hear something filed in 1201.
You would agree, though, if we adopted that viewpoint, that would be different than the viewpoint that we've taken in the past, what the United States Supreme Court has said.
The United States
Supreme Court said that courts and litigants should use the label jurisdictional, not for claim processing rules, but only for prescriptions delineating the classes of cases, subject matter jurisdiction, and the persons falling within the court's adjudicatory authority. I mean, that's not what this rule is, right?
Again, this rule, the juvenile court is a statutory entity, and it only has the authority granted to it by the General Assembly.
I understand that, but there's all kinds of things that juvenile courts are required to do by statute. If they don't do them, it's not a violation of the subject matter jurisdiction, right? I mean, juvenile courts, everything they do is governed by a statute. Not every violation means the court doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction.
Not every violation, but where there is a time limit on the judicial officer's authority to hear the case, then that is intended to be a limit on that judicial officer's authority to hear it. And therefore, that is different. It's different about whether or not they had enough facts or they abused discretion or they did other things. That's different from, I am expressly limiting your authority to hear this matter.
But that's not what the statute says, right? It doesn't say we're expressly limiting your authority to hear this matter.
Actually, it does. It says they shall not issue a dispositional order until a separate dispositional hearing is held, and a dispositional hearing shall not be held more than 90 days after the date the complaint was filed. And the Ohio General Assembly had a chance to revisit that and could have made it longer, could have had more exceptions. All it did was say it could be extended one time on the first filing for 45 days. If they had wanted to give the juvenile court more authority, the issue was plainly out there, and they chose not to take that opportunity. So, yes, it is jurisdictional because the Ohio General Assembly has said there's a limit. This is it. You got 90 days. And after April 2021, you have 90 days plus 45 if there's good cause. Not, or if nobody raises it. It's not, there was, that wasn't put in the statute. It was 90 days. Are there any other questions
for
me?
Yes. What would you posit the policy is behind regardless of whether it's jurisdictional or not, the 90 days and the 45 days, what is the policy thinking behind that?
Well, I imagine it's twofold. One, we have parents whose parental rights are being interfered with, and they have a constitutional right to raise their children, and they have a constitutional due process right to have a hearing and be heard, and to have notice and to have representation. The children also need to be protected, so we want all of this to happen timely. And that's why they put a limit on there. And ideally, if we want to address this system and make it better, then we need to look more at budgets and staffing and mechanisms to make this system work more efficiently, not just leave it out there in limbo. Because right now, quite frankly, if we're going to be talking about what's been happening since this decision, there are cases that are getting dismissed, refiled, dismissed, refiled, dismissed, refiled. I had one that was dismissed and refiled 5 times, which that's going to be a separate issue for another appeal, I hope, comes up.
Isn't that good lawyering and out of abundance of caution until this court decides the issue?
I wouldn't say that, because on some of them, they just didn't act promptly enough to get service on the parents or do their posting or be diligent.
But for whatever reason, because should your position prevail here, then after 90 days, a lot of cases go. And really what you're seem to be arguing is, you know, after 90 days, then anything the judge does is void for this dispositional decision, as opposed to voidable. If we determine that, take your position and it's void, then, which of course you can attack those judgments at any time, don't we have a slew of child custody cases that get, where there's a march to the courts to get them overturned?
I would imagine there already has been a march to the courts based on this decision, because that's what it imputes. But the problem is, we have 3 separate branches to our government, and you and I, we're not the legislature. So if we need to...
As I'm constantly reminded.
Yes, we need to change the law, if the law needs to change, I guess it would be the executive branch that maybe has the budget constraints. They need to realign their resources to, you know, move these cases better or find another way to do these cases more efficiently. You know, that's addressing the problem. But it's not the province of this court or me or opposing counsel to make new laws. We have to deal with the ones that we have, and to make new budgets, we have to deal with the ones that we have. So they need to fix the system. We just have to apply the law.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for me?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I know I'm old school, my
index cards, but.
Counsel.
Counsel, if it's mandatory but not subject matter.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the court sets a hearing 100 days after, it's 10 days after the 90 days, and there's been no extension. Do the parents have to show up to argue their case at that hearing, which the statute says shall not be held? How do they object? I'm trying to get to.
But they have to object. That's just it. I mean,
do they have to show up? Or can they just file something? We object to the court holding some hearing.
I think they can file something. But some action has to be taken.
They don't have. Why?
Because of the language that's there in the statute.
Well, the language says the hearing shall not be held.
This hearing should not be held. It shouldn't be there.
Should they have to go get a mandamus or a prohibition from us?
They could.
From the appellate court?
They could, but they don't have to. I think they simply file a motion to dismiss, saying, look, it's been 100 days. If the court says, well, I don't care, it's been 100 days, I'm holding a hearing anyways.
Do they have to show up?
They don't have to show up, but the thing is, they can also, they file a motion to dismiss, say it's 100 days, they don't show up. If the trial court dismisses, then we refile. We file a new complaint, and it continues going. If the court says no, refuses to dismiss, then the parents must appeal the denial of their motion to dismiss and appeal that disposition order, arguing that it's outside the 90 days, and they should win.
If the court does dismiss, okay, doesn't hold the hearing, and county refiles, right? is that really implementing what the legislature wanted? They wanted these cases to move.
No, but it's better than what happened in this case. As this court pointed out in NRAKM, the General Assembly did a balancing test, and it chose the number 90. As you pointed out in NRAKM, it could have chosen any time.
Right.
So it's chosen 90 days. That's what we're stuck with. But it also put in here this language that on the court, on its own motion, or the motion of any party, or the guardian ad litem, the child. So
they also put in shall not be held.
They also put that in there. So if the court violates it and issues a disposition order, that order is voidable. That order is error, true. It may be reversible error, but that order will also be, res judicata will still be subject, well, should still apply if the parents, or even the agency, or the guardian ad litem,
whoever,
sits on their hands, does not raise the issue on a direct appeal of that dispositional order, which is error. And if the case continues on to PC, and then continues on to an appeal of that PC order, res judicata should apply, and no
but by then, party should but by argue. Then the county would have refiled, probably, right?
No, not necessarily. If there's been a disposition order that's outside the 90 days,
right?
Okay, which is error, avoidable order, and no one acts on that order to get it overturned, then the case will continue on. The court, on its own motion, should dismiss, but it didn't in your hypothetical.
Right.
The agency should have filed a motion and said to dismiss it, but it didn't. The parent should have filed a motion, but didn't.
Somebody.
No one did, just like this case.
Right.
But you're saying that the court that didn't hold the hearing in 90 days is supposed to later on apply res judicata?
No, not the trial court.
The Court of Appeals.
The Court of Appeals.
Okay.
And what's complicated about this is that the process tends to be bifurcated. You first have a complaint filed seeking temporary custody, but it can seek permanent custody. But most times it's temporary custody, or to have the children placed into custody of the agency, or placed into custody of temporary custody of a family member. And once that complaint is filed, the time starts ticking, 90 days to the dispositional hearing. Once, now assuming that the dispositional hearing is within the 90 days and there's a disposition that is against the parents, so the children are in the temporary custody of the agency, then the parents have an opportunity to work the case plan. If they work the case plan, they're successful, they get the children back. There's no need for us to be here. If they don't work the case plan, or they fail at working the case plan, and the agency moves for permanent custody, there's going to be an adjudication hearing. And if the agency is successful, there'll be an order terminating that parent's rights. And then there'll be another appeal. So there's two appealable orders in most of these cases. The dispositional order, which is a final appealable order, which this court has recognized, and the order that terminates the parental rights.
And the practical tension is that the parents want to try to make this work, so they want to be given as long as possible
to make
it work, which is supposed to be within 90 days, but sometimes extends beyond that, correct?
Yes, we've had multiple disposition hearings outside the 90 days. Which is error. And I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that such any disposition order that is a result of such an erroneous hearing is voidable, not void.
But you're not doing that anymore.
We're trying not to.
Okay.
We have been filing multiple new complaints. We've been filing multiple motions to dismiss with new complaints to try to comply with NRAKM and with the 12th District's mandate in NRAKK.
Okay. So I assume you're probably filing those almost simultaneously if you've got children and parents
Yes, Your Honor.
Working through these situations.
Yes. And that gives the parents more time, and that forces the children to languish longer in a legally insecure placement. But that is better than the situation we have here, where the merits of the PC motion was adjudicated, these children were given permanency, were up for adoption by foster parents who wanted to adopt them, and now that's gone. It's completely, we're back at square one with filing a new complaint.
Unless it's voidable.
Unless it's voidable. If it's voidable, then res judicata applies, and then permanency is reinstated at the stroke of a pen. And that's what we're asking for this court to hold, that RC 215135B1 does not implicate subject matter jurisdiction, and res judicata would apply when appropriate. It would not be appropriate in all situations, but in this case it would be appropriate, and we're asking for the court to so hold. There's no other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.